famous Antietam and Beyond podcast, Fiddlers. We love those guys. Every show they lead us off. Maybe this time John and I talk, we should have had a funeral march. We'll let you know about that in just a bit, the reason for that. But welcome to another episode of the Antietam and Beyond podcast. I'm Tom McMillan with my co-host John Banks. Hi, John.
Tom, what's going on?
We got a pretty interesting episode today. We actually dipped for the first time into the National Park Service. We're going to have one of the great Park Service rangers at Antietam National Battlefield, Brian Barish, is going to be our guest. We're going to talk about the Elliott burial map or get into some other topics in Antietam. But first, John, we always kind of start off with what we've been doing the last few weeks. For those who haven't been following your blog on Facebook, where have you been?
Well, first I want to talk about a new addition to the Banks family.
Ah.
I bought a drone. I almost crashed it last night. I'm not going to say where. It's a secret location. I'll just leave it at that. Then on Sunday, Tom, as you know, I love the nooks and crannies, Civil War places. Went down with my Pittsburgh pal Jack and a guy Dan, a Lawrenceburg, Tennessee native, and we went to the Sugar Creek battlefield. The battle fought December 26th, 1864. It was on the Army of Tennessee retreat route toward Alabama. Just a remote place, untouched battlefield, unmarked, and we kind of schmoozed our way onto the property. We saw Sugar Creek. It looked emerald to me. It was really kind of crazy. But wasn't a big battle, roughly 150 Union casualties, unknown number of Confederates who were commanded by Nathan Bedford Forrest, but it was really cool to see that. One of those nooks and cranny sites that gives you goosebumps, knowing that this place, not many people visit the Sugar Creek battlefield. What have you been doing?
Well, I guess I should speak, a couple of adventures here, but I should speak about a week and a half ago from the time we're recording here, the Antietam Institute's Spring Symposium. You know, I'm on the board of the Institute. They had their one-day Spring Symposium. It was awesome. There's always a theme. This was right after the Battle of Antietam. So we started with a tour of the Shepherdstown battlefield with Kevin Pollack. We went to Shepherd U. And the next day, there were five speakers. Really, a lot of the Antietam superstars were there. Former podcast guest Scott Hartwig, former podcast guest Tom Clemens, not yet a podcast guest, Professor Broomall, James Broomall from Shepherd University. We have to get him on, maybe this summer when he's not teaching class. But
That's amazing.
It was a really impressive, sold out as usual. And that leads into the bigger event the Institute holds, which is the fall conference for 3 days, late September, which will be on the final attack. And one of the featured speakers will be John Banks.
Whoa, the pressure is on.
Come there, folks, and hear John speak, certainly about some Connecticut troops, I'm sure, and also get signed copies of his book, A Civil War Road Trip of a Lifetime. Right, John?
Absolutely. That's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, those are great events. Now, before we get into the Elliott burial map, and I have a little bit of a wind-up for that, but you wanted to ask Ranger Brian a question.
Brian, first of all, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is going to be awesome. At my advanced age, I'm not that old, but I can't become an NPS Ranger now, probably in the twilight of my journalism career. So tell me, how did this come about? How did you become a Ranger at Antietam?
All right. The long version or the short version?
Give us a medium sized version.
Yeah, sure. Moved from Cleveland, grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, moved to Frederick, Maryland. And needed to go back to college. And the goal was to move down this way just to be closer to history, whether Antietam, Gettysburg, Manassas, this whole area. And when I went to the Frederick Community College there to meet with an advisor to see which college credits would transfer and so on, she said, what would be your dream job? And I said, I'd love to be a park ranger, Civil War battlefield. And she says, well, I have just the person you need to speak with. My husband is a park ranger up at Gettysburg. And so went up and spoke with him, and he encouraged me to volunteer, whether it be Gettysburg or elsewhere, if Gettysburg doesn't work out. And a couple weeks later, I was at Antietam Battlefield in our volunteer orientation with Ranger Keith Snyder. And that was, I'm starting my 25th year there at Antietam, And it's right about this time is when I went in there the first time I ever met with Keith. And I volunteered on Mondays for a couple months. And very quickly, at the time, the Park Service had a program for students, temporary employment. And so it was kind of paid internship. During the summer, I worked there full time. During the school year, I'd work there part time. And then I was fortunate enough when I started that Park Service had a program, a student career employment program. And so when I graduated college, I was able to be brought on to the battlefield staff. And I was very fortunate and very lucky. And today it's a very different process. And I would say almost any park ranger you speak with has a different story on how they got their beginnings with the Park Service. And I was fortunate also in that I've always been at Antietam. And others, a lot of people will have to take a couple of positions at places they might not want to be. Might have to go work in this area down at the mall, or maybe go up to Independence and work there a couple of years and try to work your way to the park you want to kind of end up at. Others, they do move around a lot, but with the Civil War field or history field, people kind of gravitate towards those and they stay there for a while. And I'm one of them. I love going to Antietam. It's a great place to go every day. It's an honor to tell the story. So I'm not going anywhere anytime soon.
We're glad you're there, and we're glad you stayed. So, and we appreciate you being on, Brian. You've been a mentor and a friend as I volunteered down there. So appreciate that. Now, we asked you for some topics, and you came up with a burial map, which I was excited about because all Civil War nerds, we all love maps, we all love burials, we all love graveyards, whatever, all that stuff. But we're weird that way. But the story of the Elliott burial map—the first time I heard that phrase, as most people in this community did—was about Gettysburg, the famous S.G. Elliott burial map of Gettysburg. Little did anyone know there had been also been such a map of Antietam that was done in 1864, and no one had seen it for more than 140 years. I'm trying to remember how this all came out, because in 2020 it was in the news. And Tim Smith and Andrew Dalton, two historians from Gettysburg, Tim Smith prominent up here, Andrew Dalton, the executive director of the Adams County Historical Society. They were digging into this story. Who is S.G. Eliot? You'd heard the name. Nobody knew who he was. And Tim Smith was poking around on some digital online archives of the New York Public Library, and he hit on Eliot burial map, and a map came up, and he was looking for the Emmitsburg Road, and he was looking for Devil's Den, and he was looking for Little Round Top, and he saw the Hagerstown Pike, and he realized after a few seconds, this was not Gettysburg. This is Antietam. What a discovery this was in our little world. And one of the first folks I saw quoted about that as a ranger in Antietam was you. Can you kind of tell us about finding out about that and what that was like?
Yeah, it was quite the morning. It was early 2020, so we were in the we were all home for the pandemic. Everybody was working from home and still very early on trying to figure out what the situation was in the country and in the world. And so what do park rangers who usually work with the public and man the visitor centers and all that stuff, what do you do when you're at home? And fortunately for the staff at Antietam, we were in the middle of redesigning. We were going through the renovation of the visitor center, and so the park staff was in the midst of writing all the text for all the new exhibits, finding images, quotes, so on and so forth. And we pretty much gotten to the end of that process, and I received, I want to say it was a oh, I want to say I got an email. The first contact was an email from Gary Edelman, and he said, "Hey, when you get a chance, give me a call as soon as you can. I got something important." So I give him a call, and he everyone is familiar with Gary through the American Battlefield Trust, Gary Edelman. And he said, "Give me a call when you get a chance." And so I call him, and he's like, "All right, I'm gonna send an email, but don't open it till you get back on the phone with me." He wants to hear my what my first thoughts are. And so he sends me the email, and I open it up, and it was unbelievable. So Gary swore me to secrecy, and I told him, well, I got to tell a couple people because we're in the middle of this. This is so unbelievable that it needs to be part of this new exhibit. And so, long story short, it was Gary giving me a call, and then kind of starting to spread from there. And the trust and others wanted to kind of figure things out a little bit, and then they made a big announcement that we were Park Service, myself, we're part of that when it went kind of live in this spring of 2020.
So, Brian, two questions. One, what does the map show for listeners who are not familiar with it? And two, who was S.G. Eliot and what does S.G. stand for, by the way?
All right, let's start with the what does the map show? And the map shows a total of 5,848 graves on the Antietam National Battlefield. It was created in 1864, and so really one of the first maps of the battlefield as well. And breaking it down, there's close to 2,700 federal graves, 3,200 Confederate graves, and also almost 300 horses gathered to be more than likely burned. And now most of these soldiers have been removed to other cemeteries, whether it's Antietam National Cemetery, three Confederate cemeteries in the area, or town cemeteries. But 95, 98% have been removed. But the thing is that this is a burial map of the battlefield. As Tom had mentioned, there's a Gettysburg map that people have known about since 1930. The Antietam one, people have known about it for 4 years. So it's a unbelievable companion piece to the Gettysburg map.
And who was S.G.
Right, and just to
Eliot?
the Eliot, yeah, who was S.G. Eliot? He was the cartographer, and his story is kind of cloudy. Andrew and Tim were doing research, as Tom had mentioned, on who is this guy, S.G. Eliot, and the quick bio is he was a railroad swindler, I think is what they kind of called him. He was out in California, and he was tasked with trying to find the railroad route northward up into Oregon. And he's out there with his survey team, and they're working and working, and then kind of have a falling out. And Elliot leaves them, goes back to California, and says, "Yeah, we figured out the route. I'm going to procure some money from the folks in Washington, D.C." So he makes a trip out to Washington, D.C. And it's during that time period, early 1864, that he draws up these two maps of Gettysburg and Antietam. And really, the big differences, certainly there are more graves. There's over 8,000 graves on the Gettysburg map. The Gettysburg map, when it's created in 1864, as you folks know and people listening know, a lot of the burials, or it's a lot of soldiers that were interred on the battlefield had already been removed to the National Cemetery. And so the Antietam map, the graves were still there when the map was created in 1864. The National Cemetery at Antietam wasn't created until 1864, and burials and removals, I should say, reinterments don't start until 18. That's 5 years after the battle, 18, late 65, 66. So, do we think that he was there at either site? We don't think so, but he's using records that the early kind of students of the battlefield, or students of, or I should say, caretakers of the battlefields, if you will, kind of laid out as they went. At Antietam, there were two guys, Good and Gill, and they went out and mapped many of these grave locations all across the battlefield. And so we believe that's where a lot of this information on the Antietam map originates from, is their work in mapping these locations.
And you can see this map now online. It's readily accessible for those who haven't seen it. Right, they're marked by slashes and crosses. I think slashes for Confederate soldiers and crosses for Union soldiers all over the battlefield. And there was a quote I found from you, Brian, that because Brian is actually the guy. Tim Smith and Andrew don't find this. Turn it over to Gary Edelman. But nobody knows at that point how many burial, how many bodies are marked. So Brian and his wife Michelle took 2 days, and he sat down and he counted all those marks. His quote, this is Brian's quote: "It took a good part of 2 days and a little help from my wife." So tip off to Michelle. Hi, Michelle. We're giving you credit here. I took the map and created 24 sections to make it easier to count, then hand counted every mark on the map and checked them off as we went. 2,634 Union burials, 3,210 Confederate burials, and almost 300 horses. What did you think you were going to find when you started doing that? I mean, I'm sure your mouth was still agape the whole time you were doing it, but did you have a number you thought? Were you surprised with 5,800?
I think that was, yeah, I think I was surprised with that number. I mean, you're looking at this map, and when folks do take a look at it, you just see all these little slashes. And that was always the first question when you would show somebody, how many graves are there? How many graves is this little section? How many graves are in this box? And when you blow it up and start counting it, you just realize, and it is just another tool to drive home the cost of the Battle of Antietam. And I mean, sometimes we can, as interpreters, we could stand out there and say, 10,000 soldiers killed or wounded in this square mile in the first 4 hours, 5,500 killed or wounded in the sunken road. And sometimes it's difficult for people to picture in their mind what that number is. But this, like I said, is another tool to show the cost of the Battle of Antietam. And now with the new exhibits that we have at the visitor center, this is, it just worked out perfectly. The positioning of a, in the new exhibits, we have a casualty counter showing kind of casualties across the battlefield. And on the reverse of that counter was, I forget, I don't even remember if we had anything or any kind of graphics on the back of that. And when we were alerted of this map, we said, well, this is a perfect place for the map just because of where it is on this casualty counter and also where it is in relation to the museum. That section of the museum where it's located talks about their survival after the battle, how the families had to cope and how they cope with this tragedy that was laid upon their doorstep.
It's really a stunning visual representation of the battle. And after we post this podcast, Tom and Brian, we'll make sure that we link to the New York Public Library link where our listeners can zoom in for themselves and check out this map. And when I first saw it, I was amazed. I mean, this is really super interesting. But what really intrigued me was the fact that there are names on the map too, Brian, right?
Correct. Yeah, the Gettysburg map did have some names on it. 17 names on the Gettysburg map, and there were over 8,000 graves. Where on the Antietam map, as we said, there's close to 6,000, and there are 50 soldiers individually named on this map. And in some cases, there's certainly, I mean, you can imagine the task of being part of a burial party or these guys that went out afterwards and mapped these locations. There were certainly some mistakes, and we've come across those, and to the best of our ability, try to figure out what was going on in some instances. And in some cases, X marks a spot, in other cases, maybe not so much. But yes, as you said, there's individuals named, 50 named soldiers in the battlefield on the battlefield map.
Now, Elliot got his data, if there was such a word back then, from somewhere. And you mentioned names Good and Gill, Aaron Good and Joseph Gill are credited on the Antietam National Cemetery website at the Park Service does, with so much work in identifying grave sites and names and bodies. They did all that work in two guys from Sharpsburg in 1863. Do you think, can we assume that that's the work that Elliot used? I mean, Elliot never gave anybody any credit. He never said how he did this. And so many years passed, we'll never find out now. But it seems to me that 2 + 2 might equal 4 here.
Yeah, I certainly would agree, and that would be kind of the next big find if that catalog of names and locations ever turned up somewhere, as far as what Good and Gill produced and where that is now and how that was used in the creation of this map.
Brian, do you have any favorite stories of any of the soldiers who have whose graves have been identified on that map that resonate for you?
I think probably the one big, I mean, each one is very interesting in that it's, why is this? I mean, the question, so I guess start with a fellow from the 27th North Carolina who fought in and around the Dunkirk Church area, and then that regiment also advanced down towards the Mumma Farm Lane, 27th North Carolina, and he's wounded and he's buried, and on the map he's on the far northeastern corner of the map, furthest kind of away from where he would have been engaged in the battle. And so then the questions are, well, how do you get these Confederate soldiers out here? And then certainly, I mean, everyone knows that every barn, every house, every structure in the area was a field hospital. And so that's certainly what happens is he's wounded, he's taken back through the lines, and he expires on the farm that's where he's eventually buried. And so there has to be a little bit of knowledge as to, well, what's going on and why are soldiers here and there? And when you just start digging a little bit, then things start to make a little more sense. There are other instances where soldiers are correctly named. They were killed in the battle, but listed under a different state. And that's a case of a soldier from Minnesota, O.L. Corman. And his grave is in the West Woods. And there's another section. His grave is by itself, and there's another section very close to him. And both his grave and this other section are labeled soldiers from the 1st Maryland. There was not a 1st Maryland at the Battle of Antietam, but there was a 1st Minnesota who fought right in that area. And after doing a little digging, I came across a newspaper article of soldiers writing home and talking about burying their friend, Corporal Corman. They said his body was interred apart from all others in a beautiful grove near the battlefield. May it rest undisturbed by the clangor of battle until the great day when kindred and friends and comrades shall meet to separate no more forever. And so, obviously, this is Corman from the 1st Minnesota, not 1st Maryland. I mean, probably the big, the very, probably the one that can be kind of illustrated to most of visitors, where you can go and use a couple different tools that are very unique to Antietam. Alexander Gardner photographs, now this burial map in the Antietam National Cemetery. I guess it's now close to 40 years ago. Photography expert William Frazzinito and his study, Antietam Bloody's Day, Photographic History, who went out and found all these locations where Alexander Gardner captured these famous images after the Battle of Antietam. And the photo that's on the cover of the softback book is a lone grave, one tree, and a couple of Union soldiers standing there. And Frazzinito was able to determine by using the kind of the angle the camera was looking, the open sky in the background, and specifically the rocks that are in that photo, the location of that, Frazzinito said, was down behind the modern day visitor center. And everyone agreed with that and said, yeah, it's a good, we can buy that. Now that we have the burial map, in this case, X does mark the spot because the grave of John Marshall is marked on the map in the location where Frazzinito believed it to be. And to come full circle, you can go to the National Cemetery and visit the grave of John Marshall. So I think that story, asking for one in particular that, if you want to say, is a favorite, that one right there, because I can point people to, there's the location, here's the photo. And if you blow the photo up enough, you can see on the headboard, John Marshall, 28th Pennsylvania, and then send them to the National Cemetery. So yeah, and it's, you have this very static map, one dimensional, but you can really make it into a story. And really, for someone that maybe doesn't have an interest in visiting, why is Antietam important, or what am I doing here? It certainly gives them something to make it very real.
Brian, I got really excited when the map came out and there was a soldier in the 155th Pennsylvania, Joseph Adams. And I did some digging, not the type of digging that you do. You did much more extensive and went into the regimental history for the 155th Pennsylvania. And Joseph Adams on the map, his name appears behind the German Reformed Church on the main street in Sharpsburg, buried up on the hill beyond that. Did some digging, and his regiment was not at Antietam. They came to Antietam a couple days later, I believe, or a day or two later, something like that. And I had the good fortune, one of the readers of my blog said, "Hey, I think I know my daughter owns this property." And during my last visit to Antietam, he took me back and I was able to walk the ground, and there's a slash for Joseph Adams, and then there's like a dozen slashes for other, I believe, Union dead behind there. So it was really a profound experience for me to walk that ground. Very neat.
There's a soldier. Well, I have a good friend who works up at Gettysburg, works at actually the Eisenhower farm, Dan Vermilia. And his great great grandfather was killed at the Battle of Antietam. And not a lot was known after that. He has an account of the last time anybody saw him. They were his regiment was involved. They were part of the Philadelphia Brigade, involved in the fighting in the West Woods, and they're making a stand along what is modern day Stark Avenue. He said that was the last time we saw the soldier's name was Henry Roederbaugh. That was the last time we saw him. And more than likely, he was buried as an unknown because he had a large beard. And then he said shortly before the battle, he shaved off his beard. And so more than likely, nobody recognized him when they went to bury him. But on the map, there are, I'm going to say, two soldiers from the 106th Pennsylvania in graves marked 106 PA, but not named. And so when I first showed this to Dan, it was really, we just had a cool moment because it's like, oh, wow, don't know where he was and don't know if he's in the Antietam Cemetery or buried as an unknown, buried as Pennsylvania. But to see that he's possibly represented on this map was just really cool.
Right, we're jumping around a little bit here, but was there any clarity given in one of the more recent discoveries, recent in quotes, in the late 80s, of the remains of some Irish Brigade soldiers near the Sunken Road, who are now, they were kind of buried separately with a stone in Antietam National Cemetery. Was there any clarity that this map was able to provide to that recent discovery?
Yes, another person I spoke with pretty soon after the map was discovered was the retired now Park Service archaeologist Stephen Potter, and he was part of that project when the soldiers were found back in the late 1980s. And at the time, the Park Service did not own that land out in front of the Sunken Road. It was privately held, and so there were a couple of folks metal detecting out there on private land and came across, you know, what they thought, you know, here's a button in a straight line. Oh, here's another, you know, button. Here's another button. And they figured, oh, this might be a grave. We need to contact somebody. And so they contacted the Park Service. And so Stephen became involved in this project. And so in talking to him and showing him this map, there's a couple different groupings of U.S. soldiers buried north of the Sunken Road on the map in general location of where these soldiers were found back in 1988. And there are a couple single graves, but they're not quite where these remains were found in 1988. But there is a line of soldiers from the 63rd New York, part of the Irish Brigade. And on the map, they're listed as being kind of connected or together. We don't know if that's exactly in this burial map, how Elliot kind of placed soldiers, where the individual graves. How did he mark individual graves? If they were one by themselves, well, then there's a plus out there. But if there's maybe one and then maybe a soldier expired a day later, certainly not buried in the same grave or maybe even in the same line, but all part of this kind of grouping of soldiers designated from the 63rd New York. And so what an archaeologist thought was it was possible that when they were reinterring soldiers, maybe the folks that were hired to reinter soldiers just missed these guys or figured they were done with a row of burials or a burial pit and did not find these guys. And there's a group of soldiers that are in the general location on the map of where these soldiers were found in 1988. And the same holds true for the soldier from New York found in 2008, just north of the cornfield. There are a few Union soldiers, just single graves in the general area of where this soldier was found in 2008. And so once again, does X mark the spot of the single grave of the soldier that we found in 2008? It would be quite the story and something that we can't really confirm or deny, but there are a couple pluses out there. So in the Park Service, we're not going to go out and look for soldiers. It's not going to happen. That's why we say the battlefield is hallowed ground. No, don't disturb the battlefield.
I'm trying to get my arms around why a guy like Elliot, who's described, I've seen the same thing, he's described as a railroad swindler, Brian, who'd have done all this work and not tried to make money. I just can't understand how this thing could have been. It really wasn't lost. It had been found, but it was in a library collection. But nobody knew it existed. He didn't publicize it in any way. It's almost unfathomable to me that someone with that background would do all this work and then not try to make a buck out of it.
I saw somewhere that the maps were sold at the sanitary fair, one of these sanitary fairs, and I don't even know if it was maybe the World's Fair. I thought I saw at one point, And that's a great question. Why aren't more of these kind of out there? Did he try to make a buck, or was it just, he was there trying to make some money in the winter when he was visiting Congress trying to procure money. And so this was a project thrown at him and something that he was provided a lot of information where the barrels were for Gettysburg and Antietam, and it was something he could kind of do in his spare time. Yeah, the question, there are a lot of questions as to why we don't know more about it, why more aren't available, and yeah, kind of how it all played out. Why there's only one left is just it's amazing. And so I mean, that being said, we'd love to find another one, because there is a large section of the map. Not, I shouldn't say a large section. There's a section along the east side of the map that is completely missing, just a tear down the map. And looking at the original, when you zoom in and blow it up, the tear goes right through a section of federal graves. And so going back to the Gettysburg map and knowing kind of what Elliot did on that map, comparing it to Antietam along the one side, or in some open space in the Gettysburg map, Elliot listed a couple of the local farms, Daniel Snyder Farm, and said a couple hundred Union soldiers, a couple hundred Confederates. And so is there information missing from the Antietam map, such as that would add to the casualties or just provide more information, as far as some of these battlefield burials?
Brian and Tom, before we continue, I wanted to mention our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Civil War Trails, the world's largest open-air museum, offering over 1,500 sites across six states, including two dozen stops on their Antietam campaign driving trail. And you can request a free brochure to begin planning your trip at civilwartrails.org. And of course, Tom, when you see a Civil War Trails marker, tell us what you're supposed to do.
You stand there, you turn the phone around, you take a signed selfie, and you post it with the hashtag signed selfie, as John and I do often.
Outstanding. In fact, I did it the other day, Tom, at the Sugar Creek battlefield. Brian, I wanted to ask you, I've been on a tour with you of the 40-acre cornfield, had a large group. Do you take this map with you and show it to visitors? And if you do, I'm curious, what is their reaction to it? Are they as amazed as we are by the S.G. Eliot map? What do they say to you?
The map has really become a very useful tool, not only on the battlefield, but at the visitor center. And it's, I'd say, maybe not daily, but especially during the summertime, numerous times throughout the week, people come in and they have a descent in a specific regiment. In many cases, they were killed at the battle, maybe in the National Cemetery now today, or moved home, and they have some information. And just providing them this map. And now that it's, I mean, we just walked downstairs and the map is 10 feet tall. For them to see the map, just really, it's pretty amazing. I mean, the reaction is just, for those that have a descendant, it's like, oh my gosh, it's just more part of the puzzle, another piece that they can plug in. In some cases, it's emotional to see all these graves in the battlefield. And for those that really don't know what they're looking for a long time, there wasn't a it was just missed with all these new exhibits going in. There was the map was there, but there was not a sign saying this is a cool map. And I mean, you go down there and it's backlit, it looks beautiful, and it's just a really, oh wow, look at this map. But then when you realize what you're looking at, and for a long time, 3 or 4 months, there wasn't a sign affixed to the map saying this is what you're looking at, this is why this map is important, because there are so many lines on the map, they kind of get lost. Until you know what you're looking at, you don't really know what you're looking at. And so when you go down and show people in the visitor center, no, this map is important because each one of these slash marks is a Confederate grave, each plus a federal grave, and then all these commas for horses. And it's just, some people just can't believe it. They'll stand there for seconds and not say anything. Others are drawn to the fact that, oh wow, the look at all these horses. They start going off on another tangent, like there's just so much more to the battle than these guys were here and moved here, and these guys were here and fired against them. Just how do you, okay, what do they do with all these horses that are 40 horses gathered together? What do they do with that? So then it just opens up more stories to tell people, to engage them and to provide information.
Right. I want to delve back again to these two Sharpsburg residents brought up earlier, Good and Sill, Aaron Good and Joseph Sill, who we think did this very early work on finding out where graves were on the battlefield, which Eliot probably used. We'll never know for sure, but he pretty probably did. But as you know, my wife, Colleen, likes to dig around too, and she was digging around about those two guys, found a couple of newspaper clippings. In 1866, this is just before, the Antietam National Cemetery, where they were burying bodies. It hadn't been dedicated yet. But the story said, Mr. Aaron Good, a citizen of Sharpsburg, immediately after the Battle of Antietam, with commendable public spirit, made a very complete recording chart of the graves of the fallen of both armies. Which, that was pretty cool to see that. But then she found another one in April of 1863. This is 6 months after the battle. And for whatever reason, in the Altoona, Pennsylvania Tribune, Aaron Good has a list of the names of all the Union soldiers buried there, and by his help, the graves can easily be found, but he demands a large fee for his services. So Mr. Good was charging a lot of money to do this. It's amazing. I mean, just that so close, their work was done right after the battle. So it becomes really credible. But I just wonder, we were extrapolating here, because he was charging, no one has ever found this list. No one's ever found this map. I wonder if that was part of the subterfuge. I'm charging, I won't give it to anybody unless you pay me for it. And somewhere over the generations with descendants, it got lost.
It certainly is very possible. And unfortunately, that not only happened with the graves charging families to take them to a spot, it also happens when veterans are coming back to procure land to place their monument. Soldiers from the Philadelphia Brigade come back, and Ezra Carman is telling, the landowners, soldiers are coming back, don't overcharge them for land, but ended up happening anyways. So it's kind of the, how do you say it? I'm not sure how you say it nicely, just trying to make a buck off of people. It started, as we know, a long time ago. And so, unfortunately, it happens in the worst cases to some of these families. You know, they don't have a lot of information. They're maybe hanging on hope by a thread that they're going to find a loved one. And the battlefield certainly was a horrific place afterwards. If you can imagine being a family that, as you said, 6 months later, going to the battlefield. And by that point, there still are our wounded soldiers. I mean, the Smoketown Road Hospital is in existence until the spring of 1863. So you still have wounded soldiers there on the battlefield. Certainly not all the cleanup had been completed. And as we know, some of these graves are very shallow graves, and certainly families would come back and find bones sticking out of the ground. And to have this hope that they're going to find their loved one, and then have to pay a fee to get that information, just is really something.
And I'm curious, how are these soldiers, they're buried, the U.S. Army soldiers are buried the day after the battle, how were they identified? They didn't have dog tags during the Civil War. What was the process for identification?
A couple different things. First is, if you do not have any identification, I mean, if you had a friend that was able to come out after the battle and they knew you were killed, they could maybe come out and identify the body. If not, sometimes regiments would go out and they knew where they fought, and they would try to help their comrades who were wounded or begin the task of burying the dead. Other times, maybe a Bible with a name in it, or a diary, or an envelope with an address on it. Soldiers could be identified that way. Early, kind of the forerunner of the dog tags, there were ID discs, and soldiers would procure these ID discs from settlers that would follow the armies around, and that would have their name and regiment stamped. And so there were a couple different ways, and obviously, we'll pin the name in the hat, certainly was a way to go about that as well. But one of our park volunteers and a guide at Antietam, and has written a couple different books on Antietam, and I know they're working on Gettysburg. Joe Stahl and his co-author Matt Borders look at images, as well as Joe collects these ID discs, And so if you ever have the opportunity to visit Antietam on a Monday morning, Joe is there volunteering, and he would be more than happy to talk to you about the ID discs and these identifications. It was funny you mentioned that because I just across my desk came, there's an auction, and there's ID disc from a soldier from the Irish Brigade going up for auction, and it has a picture of George McClellan on it on the front side, and on the reverse is the soldier, his name and regiment from the Irish Brigade. So we figure that one's going to be pretty costly between Antietam, Irish Brigade. The price
Well,
will come up for that one.
an earlier podcast guest, Richard Klemm, who's a very good friend of mine, longtime Washington County resident, unearthed a ID disc for William Secor, a Vermont soldier who was taken over to the Otho J. Smith farm, and he recovered William's ID disc over there. William died, and Richard found that, and it's real small. It's silver. It's about probably a little more than an inch big, perhaps, but it's an incredible relic. And I've been over to that site with Richard with the ID disc, and to hold it, I've held it, my hands shaking on that very site where that soldier was buried is really a profound experience.
Right. As far as back to a little bit what we were talking about earlier, and Aaron Good and Joseph Gill and their or Aaron Good and Joseph Gill and their work, there's also is a list of Confederate soldiers that not sure was available to Elliot when he created this map. And it's there are some names in this list. It's really a listing of a crude listing of Confederate burials on the Antietam battlefield. And it's also a time when trying to figure out where all these soldiers have been buried. It's called the Bowie List, and it's available through the Washington, I want to say the Western Maryland Room is where folks can find a copy of that. But it's in some cases there are names listed, in other cases, as I said, just very kind of crude descriptions. Six soldiers from Louisiana buried along the sycamore tree down near the creek, or four soldiers under the walnut tree 100 yards north of the Dunker Church. And so in some instances those descriptions do match up to what is on the map, in other cases not as much. But that was created after the map was created, so Elliot doesn't have that list when he is creating this map.
We know there are no, at least identified Confederate soldiers buried in Antietam National Cemetery. There, and bodies would have gone to Shepherdstown or Hagerstown or Frederick, some cemeteries in those places. Shepherdstown just a few miles away. Is there any way of knowing how many of these Union bodies that were marked are in the National Cemetery, or could that only be a guess?
It's really only a guess because in the National Cemetery we have about 4,200 soldiers, Union soldiers, were reinterred in the National Cemetery. Now that's just not from the Battle of Antietam. Only 3,200 from the Battle of Antietam were reinterred in the National Cemetery. The others are soldiers that were killed at South Mountain, buried in a local cemetery on their way to or from Antietam or Gettysburg. Maybe part of the Monocacy campaign. So it's more of a, as my good friend Keith Snyder would say, it's more of a regional cemetery than it is an Antietam battlefield specific cemetery. So I think back to your question, do we know how many were removed from the battlefield that are marked on the Elliott map in the cemetery? I think that's we're just making a pretty good guess. When you look at it, 3,200 from the battlefield, federal soldiers, and then as far as Confederates, about 2,300 killed at Antietam and South Mountain were removed to Hagerstown to Rose Hill Cemetery.
Brian, you've walked that battlefield thousands of times. Is that fair to say
I would say that, yeah.
that? What makes it special to you?
That is a great question. I think just the fact that you can go out there and take these items, whether it's this map or the photographs from Alexander Gardner or these thousands of accounts we have, and still really see the battlefield in the way that these soldiers saw the field. Antietam being one of the best, not so much preserved, but restored battlefields. A lot of work has gone into that from different volunteer groups helping to clean up areas, whether it be a farm lane or a fence line that was had been grown over and they're clearing that out. Whether it's a project like leasing land out to local farmers to help us maintain that agricultural appearance, and just the fact of the battlefield in the time that I've been there, and in 25 years, 60% of the land that's owned by you and I, by the Park Service, has been acquired in the past 20 years. And so just having so much of the battlefield and having these different tools, and to be able to go out, and you might run into a day where it's quite busy at the visitor center. It seems like there's a lot of people in the visitor center, but once you get on the battlefield, it's you'll be hard pressed to find a time when it's overcrowded. So you can go out there and really have quite the experience, and really visualize what this area was like in 1862. So being able to do that, just to go out and have the field of my own 90% of the time, and just take these things in, just that connection to having your feet on the ground, touching that same ground, is just really what makes it special. And that's why I'm still there. It's just it's an unbelievable place. And as I said, it's an honor to tell that story every day. So every time you can add something new to your story, I mean, there's always new things popping up, or people bringing material in. Here's a letter my descendant wrote, or a diary entry, or Joe coming in with a new photo or ID disc, just to build more of the story that you've been telling, just really is really special. It's a special place.
Right, I think what you said too is part of why it's a special place. It's because of what you said. People might be surprised. 60 in your time, 60% now the battlefield has just been acquired in the last 20 years. You mentioned earlier that when the veterans came back, they had to go and buy land for their monuments. They had to buy a little plot. They put it on a farmer's land. I think sometimes people don't realize that a place like Gettysburg was preserved so early. Antietam wasn't, and yet it remained farmland. There wasn't any development, so it kind of looks, it continues to look the way it did. I think that's a unique part of that place, and I think it's why you get the feel. I feel more like I'm in a Civil War battle when I'm walking the fields of Antietam than anywhere else, even here in Gettysburg.
Yeah, I certainly would agree to that. And that whole, that's a story for another time, the whole kind of compare and contrasting the monumentation and the way that Gettysburg Battlefield was preserved, comparing that to Antietam and how that was preserved. And when you start digging in and learning about how the monuments were placed and kind of the ideas behind that, it really makes sense when you look at the Antietam monuments. So many of them are right along the roads, and that's because that's what the government owned at the time. It wasn't an idea, as you said, up at Gettysburg, where you go out and buy up every little parcel of land and then advertise to the veterans, come back and buy your plot to place your monument. That certainly was not the case at Antietam.
You know, each one of those monuments had deep meaning for the veterans who placed them there. And every time I return to Antietam, I'm drawn to one monument, the 15th Massachusetts, the Lyon Monument. Is there any monument there, Brian, that you're drawn to at the battlefield?
I love the 124th Pennsylvania Monument. Sits right up on the corner of Hagerstown Turnpike, Cornfield Avenues, the Smoketown Road. Just for some reason, the soldier standing up there, the bronze soldier, a lot of the monuments at Antietam are granite. And so just to have this stately soldier standing up there, and for whatever reason, the light is always great on that monument. So going up and getting a photo anytime, whether morning, afternoon. I run the park Instagram page, and I'm just taking a guess, but I would say there are probably, well, other than the visitor center area of picking monuments, that might be the most monument, or the most photographed monument from on our Park Service Instagram page is that mine, which is because it's my favorite. And it's hard to get a bad photo of that monument. And their store certainly is, it's a brand new regiment, and it's just, yeah, I'd say that one is, I had to pick a favorite, I would say that.
I would tell that's an excellent point about you cannot get a bad picture of that monument, particularly when the sun sets. And I followed the sun coming down one day, and you can't get a bad photo of the 124th Pennsylvania Monument. So if any of our listeners are super passionate about photography, that's the one. So thank you, Brian, for noting that. That's great.
And amazing, just thinking what we're talking about today, as much as we know, and Ranger Brian knows a lot, we are still finding new information today. This Elliott Barium map that we've talked about through the episode was just discovered or rediscovered 4 years ago during the pandemic. And we are learning from that. It's had such an impact in that short time. So who knows, maybe some of the good information will be out there from Aaron Good. We'll continue to find things, but we're continuing to learn. And Brian, thanks so much for sharing with us what you know about this incredible discovery, this incredible resource for studying the Battle of Antietam. And John, I think I hear the banjos.
They're off in the distance, Tom. Brian, hopefully you can hear the banjos too. Do you hear them?
Sounds wonderful.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.